on the Fan Morning Show. Jesse and Ailish, Sports at 590, The Fan.
That slaps.
I'm telling you, that's old school T-Swift.
What song is that?
Picture to Burn.
Yeah, I knew that. Sorry.
Let's turn this around. Bad Blood.
That's from 2006.
Me and you. Okay, let's bring in Madison Shipman, our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. Madison, are you a Swiftie? We need to know immediately.
You know, I'm not necessarily a Swiftie, but I feel like I know all of the songs.
Okay.
Because I've heard them so much, and they are very catchy. So I know the songs, but I'm not an absolute diehard Swiftie.
That's okay. We accept that on the station.
Oh, that's interesting. No, that's really interesting because I just got carved in the last block.
I
got carved for not being a Swiftie, Madison, and here you are coming on.
You appreciated her business, not her music and her talent. Anyway, I don't know. What's your football team, Madison? Your NFL team?
You know what? I don't have a specific NFL team. I think we just end up sitting there watching all of the games, although I guess I should say the Tennessee Titans, since I live the closest to the Titans. I have yet to go to a Titans game, although I have tried to drive past Nashville while a game was getting let out. The timing on my part was not my best.
I think you're safe to steer clear on the interstate there. Okay, so you're calling the Blue Jays Rangers series this week with Ben Wagner on the radio here for us at 590. Hasn't been off to a great start, to put it lightly. 0-2 against the Rangers in what we've been calling the biggest series of the season. I'm sure I've heard those words out of your mouth as well. But Vlad and Bo start 0-16, no hits yet. Just simply not good enough when the stakes are this high. Are you a little disappointed with the way the Blue Jays came out, knowing the stakes at hand?
Yeah, you know, the start of this Rangers series has not been quite what I expected. And I know when you look at the last stretch, the last few series, I was really encouraged with the way that the offense started to produce a bit more length in the lineup, I thought. Now, granted, when the teams that they were playing against, whether it was the Rockies or the A's, not necessarily the teams best known for their elite pitching staffs, I guess you could say. So I knew coming into this series it was going to be a challenge, but this was going to be a Rangers team that was really spiraling in the wrong direction. They've got some starting pitching, but really their bullpen has been an area that they've struggled with recently, and also their production with runners in scoring position. And now in the last 2 days, it seems like the Rangers have figured something out to where their bullpen is getting it done, and they have been pretty phenomenal when it comes to being productive with runners in scoring position. And a lot of that has to do with the production that they're getting from Corey Seager. I'm pretty sure that we could roll the ball up there and he would still find a way to hit the ball into the gap. It's pretty impressive with the way that he is seeing the ball recently. But at the end of the day, when you have some of your guys, your big name guys at the top of the lineup producing with runners on, and it seems like every single time, that's how you're going to start to generate some wins. And now Bo Bichette, he ended up having a pretty hard line drive hit out to right field in his first at bat. I thought it was a good at bat. He ended up fouling off a fastball the first pitch, got a slider the next pitch that he was on time for, and just drilled it out to right field, happened to go straight to the right fielder, unfortunately for him. And Vladdy has seemed to get a heavy dose of sliders this entire series. He's got 5 strikeouts, I believe, and all of them, 4 yeah. strikeouts, all of them have come via the slider. So clearly that's what they're zoning in on, just looking at throwing that ball low and away, that breaking ball. He's taking hacks at it. I thought his last at bat last night, he showed some better discipline on that pitch. Watching a couple of close ones go by, it ended up being a deep at bat. He saw several pitches, fouling off pitches left and right, but still wasn't able to get the result. It's been for me, it's been some uncharacteristic at-bats from him, too, just by the way that he was taking some almost hesitant swings at the slider, almost like he's not picking it up quite as clearly out of the hand. But there's no doubt that if you're going to want to make a deep run, you need Bo and Vladdy to be producing runs, whether it's with the home run or just stringing together base hits. You definitely need them to at the top of the lineup.
If you're the manager or the hitting coach for the Toronto Blue Jays and you see Vladdy with that sort of approach, and obviously his chase rate's up from previous years, and just does not look comfortable. Like, A, what do you do moving forward? Because I know that what seemed impossible earlier in the year, at least even 2 weeks ago, to maybe even give him a day off and let him look at it from a different vantage point, that seems to be something that is now possible. And also, like, what do you say to him to try and get him back on track?
Yeah, it really just comes down to knowing the hitter themselves and what they like to do when they're in those situations. Obviously, no hitter wants to be in a spot where you're just trying to find yourself again back up at the plate. But I almost find that you could kind of flip the script on the pitchers, too. Now, they're going to be facing a lefty tonight, but the next time he goes out there and he faces a righty that does have a slider in his arsenal, I feel like you could almost go up there and be aggressive on that pitch now in the zone, aggressive with the plate discipline, make them bring it into the zone. But you could almost go up there hunting that pitch and drive it out into right field. And I'm not saying that you have to go up there and hit the ball out of the park the opposite way, but I often find that even if you show the pitcher that you can hit even a base hit out to right field, or make an adjustment on that slider, the next at bat they come back and they try to throw you something different. Maybe they try to throw you a fastball up and in and then at that point they're playing more into your hands. So I honestly feel like it's just going to take one of those swings to where he can show, hey, I made an adjustment on this slider, take it away, find something different to hit, and then maybe he can get back on track. Now, when it comes to Bo, I still see some pretty good approaches from Bo for the most part. Like I said, that first at bat, I thought he just missed that one, just happened to go straight to somebody. Now, his next at bat came up and swung a fastball that was a bit too far in, ended up grounding into that double play. So for him, it's just being a little bit more disciplined, I would say, on the inside part of the plate, just because he's so good with keeping his barrel back behind his hands. I really find that when he's driving the ball the opposite direction, that's when he's in the zone. And watching Bo take BP, I still marvel at watching him take BP every single day, because just how long his barrel stays in the zone. It's absolutely incredible. I was joking with Ben Wagner yesterday. Everything that I could not do as a hitter is encompassed in Bo, by the way, that he's able to drive the ball the opposite direction. So I still think that you're going to see Bo kind of get back on track. I know he hasn't had quite the numbers that he would like to see coming back from that IL stint, but I still think he's in that routine. He's still doing the right things to try to get things going for him.
Give yourself more credit. I've looked at your Tennessee softball page. I've seen the stats. All right. I know you've won a couple awards. We're chatting with Madison Shipman of Sportsnet. Okay. How much better would this team be if they had a consistent, viable cleanup hitter? I know Shai Davidi wrote yesterday post game, they've had at least 10 different players in this spot, entering yesterday. They've just had a, batting at .249 in that spot, last in the MLB with 66 RBIs. Like, it's a spot where it's important, and you have Spencer Horwitz in there, and no offense to him, but he doesn't have the biggest MLB pedigree at this point. If the Blue Jays had a consistent and dynamite cleanup hitter, I feel like we would take this offense, it would skyrocket it. It would look like a much more serious lineup.
The first thing that comes to mind when you say the word cleanup hitter is home runs. And ultimately, when I look at this offense this year, it's the home runs that really seem to be missing. And I was thinking about it last night. You even add just, 10 to 12 more home runs on the entire team total, and that could probably equate to, four or five more wins on the season, too, because there is felt that throughout, even really throughout the past couple of months, there were times where if you could just get one of those timely home runs with a couple of people on base, maybe a two-out home run could completely shift the game. And to me, that's what's been missing, and now I even joked about it on the pregame yesterday. I think it's very unrealistic to go out there and just think that the home runs are going to magically appear this late into the season. So for me, when I'm looking at the offense or looking at the way that the order is put together, I do think that they're going to have to try to figure out a way to score runs that's not just going up there and relying on the home run. And I do think that last night was a prime example. Of course, he ended up getting the home run from Davis Schneider, but there are some other ways to produce out there, whether it's, Spencer Horwitz actually in that cleanup spot getting the double, and then Kevin Biggio seeing the ball pretty well. So just stringing together those quality at bats and maybe try to put some people in motion a little bit more when they do get on base. Whit Merrifield had some success in that Royal Series with a hit and run. Maybe we start to see a little bit more small ball from this offense just to try to put people in motion, just to try to change things up a little bit, because the home runs have not been there this season, and I just don't think that they're going to just magically appear this late in the year.
One of the questions, and we talked to John Morosi about this a little bit earlier. One of the questions we had looking forward with this team is obviously Matt Chapman sort of walking towards free agency here. He's getting a little bit healthier, it seems, and could be back in the mix in the next little while. But at this current point in time, you have a number of infielders who are actually performing quite well. You have Kevin Biggio at third base, who's not only doing the job offensively, but he's made some pretty amazing defensive plays as well. And the Buffalo Bisons, I don't think you want to sit any of them on the bench either. Like, is it completely necessary to have Matt Chapman immediately come back into the lineup once he's ready to go? Because let's face it, it hasn't been pretty offensively for him since basically April. We know what he's capable of defensively, but I'm just wondering if you think that's the best option for this team in some pretty important games here.
Yeah, I will say that I am glad that I'm not the one that's having to make those types of decisions.
Yeah.
Because you got to give a lot of credit to Kevin Biggio, because when you look really what, not too long ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, you're sitting here going, okay, we've got to get Chapman back, got to get Chapman back. And I do think it's a good thing for the lineup that there is so much competition, that Kevin Biggio is swinging the bat so well. He's playing such great defense that you're sitting here going, well, hang on a second. Do we want to take somebody like that, a bat like that, an eye like that, up at the plate? Do you want to take him out of the lineup? I do think that we're seeing steps towards Matt Chapman trying to get back onto the field. Watching him take ground balls yesterday pregame, he was chucking the ball across the diamond. He looked pretty good. They're trying to ramp him back up. When you look at the way that Matt Chapman wasn't able to produce really offensively recently, I often wonder how much of it had to do with those nagging injuries that he was dealing with. Maybe he comes back, maybe everything starts to feel back on track, and you would hope that you would see a September that was similar to what we saw from Matt Chapman in April. I still do think that when he is available to come back, I do want to see him in that lineup just because of the pop that he can provide. Like we just talked about, that's something that this lineup is missing. But I would say that it's probably a good problem to have when you have that level of competition and you're having to think about really the strategic side of trying to bring somebody back into the lineup that hasn't been in the lineup, because you've got guys that have been producing fairly consistently really the past couple of games.
Madison, where would this baseball team be with 162 games of Davis Schneider in the lineup?
He just continues to impress me by the way that he doesn't over adjust. You know, when pitchers are going out there, it wasn't too long ago that he had a game where he had three strikeouts in the game. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go up there and completely throw away the game plan that's been working for him the past couple of games and try something completely new. He just goes up there and has a very calm approach. He's not going to chase outside of the zone. He's going to, again, the big thing for him when he steps into the box, and I feel it and you know that the pitchers feel it, it's like he immediately puts pressure on them to bring the ball into the zone. And once you get a pitcher that's trying a little bit too hard, maybe trying to get their pitches to break a bit more, be a little bit more picky with where they're locating their pitches, all of a sudden you've got them thinking, and that's exactly where you want them. And it just feels like his calm demeanor about him too, his very strong swing up at the plate, and the way that honestly he just gets the ball in the air. He gets a lot of backspin when he's able to make contact with the baseball. Everything that he's been doing puts the pressure on the pitcher, and it just exudes confidence to me. Even if he doesn't quite necessarily get the result, you just know when he steps up there, he's going to give you a quality at bat. He's not going to go flailing outside of the zone. And at the end of the day, those are the little things that can really bring a lot of energy to your team. And you look at the middle of the lineup yesterday, that was where all the energy came from. The Spencer Horwitz, Kevin Biggio, Davis Schneider, and just the way that they have approached their at-bats recently, that's something that you get really, really excited about because of the way that they've been consistent, the way they come together, and just that energy that they provide.
Yeah, it has been amazing to think where the Blue Jays would be without the contributions of those three guys, and particularly Davis Schneider. So the Blue Jays a little bit behind the eight ball here in this series, losing two straight to the Texas Rangers, and can no longer get the tiebreaker from Texas, tied with the Mariners for the final wild card spot. When you look ahead to the next two games in this series, if there's a silver lining for Toronto the whole season, it's been their pitching, and they got two of their best going in the next two games, Yusei Kikuchi tonight and Kevin Gausman on Thursday, tomorrow night. What are you expecting from those two? And do you think it's enough to have that kind of consistency and contributions from those two guys, despite what the offense has been able to give you in the last number of days?
Yeah, I definitely think offense, of course, is where my mind goes to if you're going to try to come out with a couple of wins against the Rangers. But at the end of the day, your starting pitcher has to do the job of keeping your team in the ballgame long enough to give your offense a chance. And I really do think that the starting pitching has done a really good job of that, not just over the past month, but really the entire season. Even Hyunjin Ryu yesterday, he's a contact guy. He's going to give up a couple of runs. And I do think for the most part, he did a really good job against an offense that's starting to heat up for the Rangers of just giving his team a chance to try to come back into that ball game. But for Yusei Kikuchi, ended up going five innings against the Royals in his last start, only had three hits. I thought he's been looking really, really sharp recently. And it's all coming down to him being able to locate his fastball in all quadrants of the strike zone. But just the way that he's attacking the strike zone early, too. And we talked about how Davis Schneider puts the pressure on the pitchers. On the flip side, as a pitcher, if you're commanding the strike zone with all of your pitches, it just feels like you're in a losing battle when you're up there in the box because you're trying to decide what you want to hit, and the pitcher is just nailing every single one of their spots. That can be a defeating feeling when you get into the box, too, and that's something that we've seen from Yusei Kikuchi really throughout the year. I even think back to that start that he had against the Mariners in Seattle. The higher the leg kick, the better Yusei Kikuchi is feeling when he's out there. And so I'm expecting him to come out here and have a similar start to what we saw against the Royals, just commanding the zone with that fastball, being able to locate some of his breaking balls in there as well. It'll be interesting to see, too, just how long they decide to keep Kikuchi in there if he is having a good day out there. Mm-hmm. I thought just the timing in which with that Royals game with the lineup going the third time through the order, they ended up taking him out. After those five innings, I believe he was just at 88 pitches. You were kind of in the in-between zone. Now, typically, he's going roughly five innings, occasionally six innings throughout this season. He did have that seven-inning game against the Guardians, but I'll be curious with the way the bullpen has been giving up a lot of walks recently, if maybe they try to leave him in there an extra inning or two just to give that bullpen a bit of relief. But, of course, that'll depend on where they are in the lineup, what the score is, obviously. But that's the one question that I have coming into today's ball game is what sort of length are we going to see from Kikuchi today?
Madison, you've played in a lot of important baseball games, playoff baseball or softball down the stretch in your career. Now, I feel like the fan base is torn sometimes with the way that this roster carries himself. There's people complaining that they're too fun and nonchalant at times and that they're not taking things serious. And then the other side is, they don't look like they care enough. They don't look like they're being, there's a leader that's very present, that they're, you know, throwing things around or getting frustrated and they want more from the manager himself. When it gets down to these next 18 games and it feels like a win now mentality, it feels like this is playoff baseball. How do you balance what you're showing externally and what's going on internally? How important are veterans at this time? And what do you expect or want to see from the Blue Jays in terms of how they carry themselves when these games matter so much and there's a lot of pressure on them?
Yeah, I do think when you look at the team, especially recently, I think it's really easy to kind of dissect their every single move just because it's getting late in the season. We know how important these games are. And obviously they're not quite playing the way that everybody anticipated that they were going to be playing this late into the season. I really do think you've got a bunch of different personalities on this team, and it would be uncharacteristic to have guys that it's not necessarily their personality to be, you know, showy or, you know, super outgoing. Those are the types of things that you really don't want to see, guys straying away from what they do on a regular basis. Now, I when it comes to the veteran leadership and you get into these clutch games and these high-pressure games, I've always said that it comes down to being able to channel the energy and the emotions that come with these games with the high stakes and channel them into focus. And that's where you get some of that veteran presence to kind of help some of the other guys on the field, not let the situation get too big for them. George Springer is an example to me. I feel like throughout his career, he's been in those playoff type situation games. He's been on the really good teams, and he never really feels like the situation gets too big for him. So he's one of the guys that I look to when it comes to kind of setting the tone for the rest of the team too, trying to get them back on track. But when I think about watching this team the rest of the season, it's not like you haven't seen it. What we're seeing, I guess, personality wise recently is not something that's vastly different from what we've seen from the rest of the season, I guess, in my opinion. But I think that a lot of energy and good energy can often come from producing offensively. So I'd imagine that you would see a very different dugout if you start to get some consecutive base hits in a row.
Yeah, winning is fun. Simply stated. Yeah. I think if they can put together a couple here to wrap up this Rangers series, not only is it important for wild card implications, but important for team vibes. So we're looking forward to that. Madison's calling the games on 590 here with us and Ben Wagner for the rest of this series. Appreciate you coming on this morning. Hopefully we got some good baseball tonight and tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
That's Madison Shipman, Blue Jays analyst and at Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Big one tonight. Kikuchi, yeah, he didn't get the longest of leash in his last outing, and I know that upset a lot of people because he was dialed, and he wasn't even at his highest of pitch counts. He came out early, and Kikuchi's a battler. Like, I love watching him pitch this season because he wants it. He's fierce. You can see it when he's dialed in. He's got the fist pump. He's doing the leg kick. He's really obviously changed his entire outlook as a part of this Blue Jays rotation from last year to this year. I'm really excited to watch him tonight. I think that if you're looking for a turnaround, it's a guy like that who wants to pitch, wants to play well, doesn't want to come out of the game. The team rallies around him. What more could you ask for a game tonight where you need to get out early, you need to have runs produced, but you also need to keep it close, and that is Yusei Kikuchi's money. So Kikuchi tonight against Jordan Montgomery, and he's not an
slouch.
Easy guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a big one tonight. I'll be there. Can't wait to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, Yusei has been so impressive all year, and it feels like he's just got a confidence and a swagger that he was severely lacking in his first year with the Toronto Blue Jays, but that is definitely back. And I would like to see him go a little bit longer and get a little bit more of a leash.
More consistency, because sometimes you keep guys out there like Bassett that should have been pulled, and then sometimes you keep guys in there like Kikuchi that should have had more length. Like,
for
what's
sure.
the rule?
Like, I get that the track record with Bassett, you know, he was coming off two straight eight inning games, but I think you have to identify when a guy has it, when a guy doesn't have it. And Buck was saying this earlier this week on this show and on the broadcast, you know, sometimes you gotta just trust your eyes. And when you say Kikuchi was dealing against the Kansas City Royals, not a very good team at all. He had 8 strikeouts through 5. He was humming along. Like, why bring him out? And they ended up using tons of pitchers at the bullpen that night. And the way I look at it is the more pitchers you bring in, the more risk you have of one guy not having it.
And honestly, the bullpen hasn't been a massive source of confidence over the last couple of days. Like, they're still getting hit around there, and they're giving up runs. And I know this has been a pretty powerful Texas Rangers offense, but it hasn't been the same shutdown feel for the bullpen for a little bit of a stretch. It's not that I think that these guys have lost it, but there is a lot of, they've had to pitch some pretty high leverage games this year, and they've done an incredible job at that, but not the biggest point of confidence throughout this last couple of weeks. So
no, there were so many positives pitching related that you could look at all season long, whether it was a starting rotation or the bullpen. Now it kind of is just the rotation. To your point, the bullpen hasn't been as good lately in the biggest games of the year, which is obviously distressing. And I think that puts more pressure on John Schneider to make the right decision when it comes to his starting pitchers and when to take them out. And if Kikuchi is rolling tonight, like, don't give him an early hook and go to a bullpen that's been struggling. Let him go. Let him pitch. And Ailish will cheer it on.
Oh, will I ever. Like, Trevor Richards was a pretty good success story. And over the last 4 games, he's got 7 earned runs. And those were against Kansas City, Oakland, Colorado, and Texas.
Yeah.
7 earned runs in 4 games. Just things to consider when you put him back out there. Okay, let's take a break. We're getting right back into Canada basketball, continue to celebrate what they've done. But you know what? Big future ahead. Nate Bjorkgren is going to join us, assistant head coach of the Canadian men's basketball team. He's also a former Raptors assistant coach, so you might recognize him from that. They're back from their incredible tournament at the FIBA World Cup, where they had their best ever performance, securing an Olympic berth, as we all know. We had a great chat yesterday with Michael Bartlett, who spoke really highly of the team chemistry and the team vibe. And I know a lot of fans on Twitter really liked that clip that we shared.
That was amazing.
It was really, really awesome. We've had a great chance to talk to a lot of assets, a lot of different areas of the Canadian men's basketball team. We'll get another chance here with Nate after the break. We'll do the wake and rake to wrap up the show. So you can send those picks in at 590-590. Blue Jays and Rangers looking for a good one. Blue Jays -125. So hopefully they show up like the favorites.
A little bit surprising.
They show up like the favorites.
Maybe that's something to look at for the wake and rake.
I'm always betting on the home team when you're in attendance. So there's a preview of mine. Okay.
Nice.
Nate's going to join us on the other side of the break with Jesse and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Jesse and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Big proud Canadians here. We've been watching what they've been up to at the FIBA World Cup. They're home now. They're scattered across wherever they had to.
Yeah.
But we'll keep celebrating. It's been a wonderful journey. I think there's a lot of new fans which are getting on board, and what a time to do that. Headed to Paris Olympics next year with a bronze medal at the FIBA World Cup. Let's talk to Nate Bjorkgren, former assistant coach for the Raptors. We know him here from that, but of course, current assistant head coach at the Canadian men's basketball team. Nate, congratulations. Welcome back to wherever you are in the world. And we're really happy to have you on the radio this morning.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very proud to be here talking with you. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to talking about our little journey we had there over the last 35-40 days.
35-40 days. What a quick turnaround from getting a new head coach and getting a team together, acclimated, flying all the way across the world and winning a bronze medal. It seems like a whirlwind. We were proud to cover it and to chat about it, but you're there, you're on the ground, and you're a part of this team. What was this journey like for the squad? I mean, sure, it's a struggle to get things going so quickly, but it looked like it was a seamless transition and one that obviously got you on the podium.
Yeah, everything was great the whole way through. This is actually, you know, I've been with the program now for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. I've got to experience 2 World Cups. So with this one, obviously being the most memorable, but such a great group of guys, such a determined, you know, group of guys. And I tell you what, it is such an honor to coach this team and to be involved in this Canadian basketball program. There's more and more coming. I mean, there's such great players in this country, men and women, at a very young age that are keeping coming. They're really watching, you know, what our national teams are doing now. But give a lot of credit too to you know, the most credit goes to the guys, but give a lot of credit to Jordy Fernandez, you know, coming in, and he did one heck of a job, you know, head coaching this team. And it was an honor and a lot of fun.
Nate, one of the things that really resonated with the listeners of the show yesterday was when Michael told the story about, I think he said, Kelly Olynyk, after the dagger three that sent the game in the bronze medal to overtime, someone in the huddle said, it's okay, we got 5 more minutes to play together.
How much of a privilege is it that we get to spend more time together as a team in this tournament?
Exactly.
They love each other.
And that, I think, we heard so much. We spoke to Rowan Barrett last week. We heard so much about the culture of this team and how they really enjoy each other's company and how important that is, especially in a short tournament. But so much training and you know, being together for so long prior to the tournament. Just talk to us about the culture and how much they, in fact, enjoyed being around each other.
Yeah, what a moment you just described. Yeah, it was, you talk about a team sticking together through the toughest of times. I mean, when that three ball went in, that Bridges threw up there at the buzzer, you know, right in front of our bench, too. So, I mean, but they did. We got that huddle together and talk about the leadership and the focus and those guys that you named with Kelly, Dwight, Shea, you know, Dylan, RJ. I mean, they were like, we are not going home empty handed. They kept saying, we are finishing this thing. Let's go. And to be able to regroup like that you know, in a positive way like that says a lot. You know, just the whole journey of it. I mean, we went to Spain, we went to Germany, we went to Indonesia and the Philippines, and you could see it. You know, this is something that you feel, you just see the team continue and feel the team continue to get better and better the entire way through. You know, there could have been a lot of feelings of, man, we've been gone for so long and want to get back home and let's just get out of here. And there was zero of that. And that is the sign of a championship team and good things to come. And like you said, we got the bronze here in this World Cup, which is something that has never happened before for a Canadian men's national team. But we got big things to go after yet. We qualified for those Olympics, and you know, there's a gold medal to be had.
Yeah, it's always a cherry on top when you could take home hardware over the United States, who failed to do so. We do like that a lot here in Canada. Okay, so you did play some pretty massive global opponents, the best in the world, really. And Canada was working their way into that conversation of being the best in the world, as you mentioned. Now the ceiling has continued to grow. Canada's going to go to the Paris Olympics for the first time in a very long time. So what do you set for an expectation? What are the goals now moving forward? You're not just the fun got in and we're a fun, chippy team to play against. Like, you are global competitors on the world stage with some names that can really put themselves in the conversation for best in the world. What are the goals moving forward when you look at what this Canadian men's basketball team can do?
Yeah, number one, on how we can get better. You know, it's on everyone's mind right now, the Olympics, and it'll come quick. You know, I remember just, you know, waiting for that first game of the World Cup against France. I mean, it seemed like, you know, it was a long ways away, but things approach you very, very fast. And number one is just to continue to get better. And what we'll do a lot of, I'm sure of, is continue to, you know, meet. I mean, everyone will be scattered across the world, like you said, playing in either the NBA or overseas on their teams. But we'll have Zoom meetings. We'll always have coaches meetings and just continue to find ways on how we can get better. But this might even have been a better answer on your previous question, but the guys, are their approach to the game and their approach to the Olympics coming up, I mean, they want it very badly. They're very professional. They're very smart. I mean, we could give game plans at these guys for the teams we're about to play, and they would take that game plan to another level. It's a very smart team that you can tell them something one time, and they do it, and they never forget it. And that's a sign of really good things to come. And, you know, and then these guys will be playing against each other in the year, you know, throughout the NBA and throughout the world, and we'll get together as many times as we can.
Do you think that everyone in the program genuinely believed, like all the way down to the players, that going into this tournament, that winning it was potentially an option? Because, you know, I think the Olympics was certainly the goal, to get a berth. But once you guys did what you did against France, I think that's when everyone outside of the program maybe raised an eyebrow and said, hey, they could actually do some damage at this tournament. But was the belief always there within the room that we have what it takes to actually win the FIBA World Cup?
It was. It was, and I think it, because it was talked about so much. We were there. We were in a tournament, and there was a tournament to be won. And we know, doing the best that we could and just taking every single game, just one game at a time, to win it would qualify us. But we would. It was our intention. That we weren't walking out of there, you know, without a medal or trying to win that thing. And, you know, our group was so tough in the beginning. I think a lot of people were picking France and Spain, you know, to come out of our little group. And that's why you play. I mean, sure enough, it was Canada and Latvia that came out and surprised a lot of people. But it didn't surprise us. We were on that mission that we've talked about to go win it. And we were really close. I mean, that Serbia game, about everything that could have went wrong, went wrong. It was just one of those games that you guys have seen on TV and been watched with your own eyes and been a part of. It was, you know, a tough whistle, ball didn't go in, and you know, just it, things just didn't go our way. But we were knocking on that door to win that whole thing there, and that's the plan, you know, moving forward for the Olympics.
I know you mentioned Jordy Fernandez earlier. You served with Nick Nurse for quite a while, even on the Raptors, and then obviously with the Canadian men's basketball team. So that transition is never easy. There's a different voice in the room and somebody with a bit of a time crunch to get to know the guys, to get the respect level, to instill his own techniques and methods of coaching. How impressive was what Jordy Fernandez did and will continue to do with this team? We got to hear snippets of it with the microphone in the scrum, which was hilarious, and also really nice to get a quick taste of what his coaching style is. But the guys seemed to respect him and obviously responded well and were able to get on the podium.
Yeah, very good coach. You know, I've known him for a while, just coaching against him. We coached against each other in the D League, obviously coached against each other in the NBA. You know, he's over there at Sacramento and was a huge, huge part, you know, of that team being successful and the run that they went on last year, and with good things to come. But he's a good coach, and I think his best quality is his demeanor. Is his, you know, he's got a good feel for what the players are feeling. He's got a good feel of what to do, what not to do in practice, of when to push, you know, when to challenge and when to pull back. I think, you know, all of those things are very, very good qualities of a head coach. And, you know, for him to step in like that and do what we did, you know, and have the players really gravitate to him, I mean, it says a lot. You know, he's on his way to, you know, he's already proven how great of a coach he is, and he's going to be even better, and he'll be a head coach in the NBA very, very soon.
I think one of the major stories of this tournament was Dylan Brooks and how remarkable he was all tournament long, but especially in the bronze medal game against the Americans, 39 points, just a really record-breaking performance from Dylan Brooks. It was a difficult year for him in the NBA last year, let's face it, and there were whispers of whether he was going to even be an NBA player moving forward. So how are you guys able to get the best out of Dylan Brooks in this tournament and extract basically everything you possibly could out of a guy like that?
First of all, what a stud he is, and how proud he is to be from Canada, to be from Mississauga, and just he is a stud. I love him. I enjoyed every single second with him over that, whatever, like we talked about, the 35, 40 days together. And just, he wanted to prove it. He wanted to play for his country, and his teammates love him. And I know us coaches love him and what he can do. He is a monster out there, and he gets your respect and your attention very, very quickly for the things that he can do. I mean, he can defend, he can score the ball. He is an unbelievable competitor, and he just stepped right in like the rest of them and just wanted to do everything he could for his country. It's such a pure, I'm telling you guys, it's such a pure form of basketball to play for that name on your chest and play for the people back home, you know, and all over Canada. And he did that. He did that so good, like all the rest of them, like at such a high level. And just to be close with him and be with him every day, just how professional he was. And I tell you what, I'd coach him anywhere. And if anybody ever asked me about him and what it's like to coach him, they would want him on their team. And he is an absolute stud.
I think he single-handedly brought LeBron James and the Avengers to the Paris Olympics next year. What do you make of Team USA thinking, we can't allow this to happen, back-to-back tournaments? We might bring all of our biggest stars over to Paris.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens. That's why we just continue to focus on our group and get so much better. And we know we've made some noise now, but there's a lot more noise to be made, and our guys are ready for that, and they like the challenge of keep getting better. I'm telling you, I think it worked. It's working itself out like in a really, really good way. We tasted a little bit of it, you know, with the bronze medal on getting third, you know, in the world, and we want more. So I think the order that we did it, qualifying for the Olympics, getting third in the world, and our guys want more, and so do I.
Yeah, it's like a taste of what could come, right? It's going to leave you hungry. You got that hanging up on your wall, but you want to change the color of it. You want to go for silver, for bronze, for gold, right? It's a completely different thing to be at top of the podium. We're talking to Nate Bjorkgren, current assistant head coach of the Canadian men's basketball team off of their FIBA World Cup performance. Shea, obviously, as a global name now, but he was a Canadian star first, and we loved him, and we got to appreciate what he did in the NBA, but now he's becoming the face of Canadian basketball. Not that I would have not wanted to see Jamal Murray there, but it almost worked in a way that Shea had his own moment. Shea had his moment to be the face for this tournament. And obviously with Jamal hopefully coming back from injury and being able to be there for the Paris Olympics, do you think it gave Shea like a platform that he might not have got if Jamal Murray was also there? I know, as I said, it would be great to see Jamal there. But Shea had a really, really big moment, a big tournament. And I think we've all fallen in love with the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander story even more so. And knowing that those two will both hopefully be on the team moving forward is just even better.
Well, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, obviously, Jamal Murray, you know, what a great player and coming fresh off of an NBA title. But I tell you what, Shea... he does some things out there that are unbelievable. You know, I've been in the NBA, you know, over 10 years. So I've been able to see some of the very, very best at it, obviously very, very up close. And he's right there. I mean, you talk about a first team all NBA player and a young man who just is really thirsty and striving to get better and better, you know, on the court. But we saw glimpses of that before too. Mm-hmm. Like, remember last summer we were in Hamilton, we played the Dominican Republic, you know, we had a couple window games. I think we beat Argentina in Victoria. You know, these were the summer windows on qualifying for the World Cup. And in those games, he's just unbelievable. The way that he moves, the things that he can do on the floor, he can score from the arc in the mid-range, get to the rim, get to the foul line, as you guys saw. But he is, you talk about first-team All-NBA and first-team All-World Cup. I mean, this guy, those numbers are going to keep improving. Mm-hmm. He is that good. And it was his team, and he is that much of a stud, and the guys and all of us know it.
See, it plays some beautiful basketball. We're proud to have him on our side, and we appreciate you coming on this morning. Congratulations again, Coach, and enjoy what's going to be a busy season headed into Paris, which is just really around the corner.
Yeah. It is. And thanks, guys. Thanks for the phone call. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it, and talk anytime. I mean it. I love my family, and I have called Mississauga and downtown Toronto home over the last 5 years, and you know, my son and daughter play basketball and other sports there, and we absolutely love it.
Oh, well, we appreciate your time, and we will certainly have you on down the road. Thanks so much. That's Nate Bjorkgren, associate head coach, the Canadian men's basketball team, former assistant coach for the Toronto Raptors. You know him well, and Sauga City, they put it on the map.
Yeah. Nice.
At the FIBA World Cup.
Yeah.
And he's still repping it. Let's take a quick wake and rake to set up tonight's Jays and Rangers game and what else is going on in the MLB.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
I hope I don't regret this, but when you go to a baseball game, you want to cheer for the home team. The Blue Jays stopped the slide tonight. Jesse?
Are you sure you don't want to do
Kikuchi.
Like an emotional hedge?
No, I want to watch my team win. I want to see somebody get a nice bucket shower from Vladdy. It'd be nice if he did it to himself.
Yeah.
You can only hope for so much. I'm hoping for a Blue Jays win tonight. You say Kikuchi on the mound. Jays money line is my selection today.
That's bold. Very bold.
It shouldn't feel that bold.
Well,
just win
bold.
A damn game. No, and that's not that
it's
hard.
It's also bold just because you could potentially be happy either way with an emotional hedge. Instead, you're choosing that if they lose, you're going to be even more upset. But that's fine. I like the confidence and I respect it greatly.
Confident.
And I really hope you have a great time tonight. I'm going with the Atlanta Braves because I am desperately in need of a victory. And Spencer Strider is on the mound. And Spencer Strider against... everyone in the league strikes them all out. He's playing the Phillies tonight. Strider, we know how good of a year Kevin Gausman has had, and specifically strikeout-wise, he has 217 strikeouts. That's behind one man, and that man is Spencer Strider. Gausman has 217 strikeouts on the year. Strider has 250.
It's pretty remarkable.
It's insane. And yeah, he's been roughed up a couple times, 3.83 ERA in the year, but he's 16-5, and the Braves are unbelievable. And I need a victory. So in my final morning show, for the foreseeable future, I'm going with the Atlanta Braves.
-182 on the money line. They better hit. Okay. Yeah. Let's go through the Wake and Rake submissions. We got a lot of love for my guy, Yusei Kikuchi. Brandon and Keswick, Kyle Schwarber home run, Luis Robert Jr. home run, and grab it while you can. +9 Raiders against the Bills. Okay. We'll move into that when we preview this weekend.
Just the dismissal.
I don't need to see the Bills this morning. Yeah, I break. Got you. Philippe in Keswick says, Kikuchi over 5.5 Ks. Love it. Good morning. It's Eric Big E in Burlington. I like the Cubs on the run line against the Rockies, the Guardians +1.5 on the run line versus the Giants, and Baltimore on the run line against the Cardinals. Holy run line city there, Eric Big E. Have a great day. TJ in Stouffville, if there was a comeback player of the year, you say would be a front runner. I like him to get over 6.5 Ks, the Babe to get over 1.5 hits, and also Cubs on the run line. That's lots of support for the Cubs today. Love the show. Thank you. Morning, Ailish and Jesse. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. We're working on it. Going back to the Dome, this time with work friends. Hey, me too. We're getting the W tonight. Yes, this is my Blue Jays parlay money line. You say over K's and David Schneider over bases. Look at the support. Everyone's on the same page today. That's Courier Chris in Milton. The Eric from Burlington. Good morning. Cubs picked didn't hit last night. Neither could the Jays. Yeah, it was tough. What a stinker of a night. Today I'm picking the Astros run line. If they got swept by the Athletics, I would be shocked. I completely agree. It's been kind of embarrassing.
Yeah. I kind of like that.
And final two here. Good morning, Corey from Port Hope. For my Wake and Rake pick, I like the Diamondbacks on the money line over the Mets. Tonight, Gallen on the mound for Arizona, and they're hanging on to that last wild card spot. They need the win. Who doesn't? Hey, Ailish, it's Nick and Milton. Same as last time, Kikuchi over K's. Whew.
No, I'm not letting you do it. I'm not letting you go more than one bet on the Blue Jays.
What?
That's no. I'm not. You can't.
The whole text line wants Kikuchi over K's.
I know,
you can't deny the people what they want,
Jesse. No, because John Schneider's going to take him out after 4 innings.
That's actually a real consideration. So why don't we just do a heart pick with that one? Everybody can do it on their own.
You're leaving yourself open to just having a difficult night.
Yeah, we went 0-3 yesterday, so it's fine. Cubs on the run line, we have twice. David Schneider over bases, we have twice.
No,
Kikuchi over K's, we have a bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have multiple picks for the Cubs.
I like, yeah. Yeah, sure.
I mean,
they're much better than the Rockies, obviously.
So why don't we do that?
Okay.
Multiple support means easy pick. So Blue Jays money line, Braves money line, coward pick -182. and Cubs on the run line. Parlay that up +430.
Shots.
Yeah.
It is a coward pick, though. I agree.
We love Yusei. One thing I was looking at is odds against tonight's probable pitchers, Blue Jays and the Rangers. Jordan Montgomery has faced the Blue Jays a few times, and Bichette, 2 home runs and .429 batting average against him, 8 RBIs. I like Bichette to get out of his slump today. So when I go down to the ballpark and I make my own parlay of the Blue Jays to win, Yusei over K's, and Bichette either to get a couple of hits or a couple of bases.
I tried.
You'll be like, sad.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I hope for the best for you and for the Toronto Blue Jays. So
me too.
I hope it works out.
Well, thanks for coming on for the last week and a half.
That was honestly
did you have
so much
fun?
It was incredible.
What did you learn?
I had a blast.
Who's your favorite co-host?
I'm going to go with a no comment on that.
Wow. Couldn't even give me one vote of confidence.
No, I've worked with literally 20 different people over the summer, so I can't. But I had an absolute blast doing this with you. It was so much fun.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and you are always welcome on the morning show. But get some sleep. You earned it, and we'll be back tomorrow on Baby Friday with Justin Cuthbert.